There's a stereotype out there about women, and that is that they have a tendency to nag, okay? But I'm standing up here and I'm telling you that this is absolutely undeserved and unwarranted and untrue. And if anything, if we're going to be honest about it, it's we men who tend to be the big babies half of the time and complain about that. So I've got a story that falls in line with that. There was this couple that was married, and he was exactly that type that I was talking about. We all know this type, a know-it-all who complained about everything. And one day he and his wife took this trip to the Holy Land to visit Jerusalem. And right from the get-go, he started. They got into the cab to go to the airport, and he says, with all the money we're spending, we have to take a cab. Why didn't we hire a car? And then he got to the airport, and he saw the seat assignments, and he was unhappy. And he says, I can't believe you let them give you these seats. Couldn't you have gotten better seats for us? And they get to Jerusalem, and they check into the hotel, and of course, that wasn't okay. And then he starts in on her. You know, why does it always take you so long to get ready? And why are you wearing that today? And can't you do anything right? Well, a couple days into the trip, sadly, really, he had an accident and gets killed. So the wife meets with a local mortician who says to her, ma'am, we could do all of the prep work and send your husband's body back to the States for $15,000, or for $500, we could give him a nice funeral right here in Jerusalem. And she pauses for a moment and she says, ship the body back. I'll pay the $15,000. And he says, dear lady, we're here. Of course, we will honor your every wish, but I'm just curious, why would you spend all that money when we could put together such a nice burial here in the Holy Land? And she says, well, as I understand it, a couple thousand years ago, some guy died here, was buried, and 3 days later he rose from the dead. I ain't taking any chances. So, ladies, I'm on your side. I'm telling you that right now. So today we get to talk as we begin our series about Bible stories. And the opening story that we're going to go with today is the story about Samson and Delilah. And it is absolutely one of my favorite stories throughout all of the scriptures. You know, I take the time to go and read it. It can be found in the book of Judges. And the crux of what we're talking about today is going to be primarily about chapter 16. But you can go back a couple chapters and it will give you the history of how Samson comes to be and so forth and so on. And it's really, it's a wonderful story. I mean, it makes great script. It has absolutely everything about it. It has romance. It has intrigue. It has sex. It has violence. It has betrayal. And lots of bloody killings. I'm telling you, it's just everything that we promote in America right now, right here in that book, that was written about 2,500 years ago. So I actually invite you to take a look at it. And so what I'd like to do today is I'm going to give you a Reader's Digest version of this reading. And then when we're through, I'm going to go back and touch on the metaphysics of the story and how this story about Samson and Delilah applies to each and every one of us in our daily lives. Samson absolutely was a person chosen by God. He is what was called a Nazarite, which was also the case for John the Baptist. And that translated, that means one chosen or consecrated for and to God. And this happened, this was all laid out for him before he was born. In fact, if you go in the preceding chapters, you'll see a narrative that sounds a little bit familiar, because before Samson's mother was even pregnant with him, she is approached by an angel and told, lo and behold, you are going to give birth to a son who is going to do a lot of wonderful things for the Israelites. Sound a little bit familiar? Anyway, God's plan for him was to liberate the Israelites from the Philistines. And if you're not familiar with this, just some basic history, the Philistines were the most common enemy of the Israelites in the Hebrew scriptures. And when the Israelites were behaving so-so or not pleasing the Lord, then the Lord would allow the Israelites to subdue them and conquer them. And then they would have to be liberated. And this is kind of an ongoing cycle in the scriptures. And so God brought Samson into being for this purpose, to do exactly that. And he gave him all of the tools that he needed, which was basically one. Samson had untold physical strength. And so as he grew up and became a young man, he was quite the stud. And he had only one thing to worry about, and that was to never, under any circumstances, visit a barber shop. Okay? He could not cut his hair, nor could he allow anybody to cut his hair, because if he did, that would, in effect, reduce him to a mere ordinary man like anybody else. So God commissions him to do this. And by the way, he never had to work out 5 days at health club or do any kind of Atkins diet or anything like that. It just was. And early on, Samson's doing a pretty good job of all of this. He rises to power, and he becomes one of the judges. And just to share a little history to you, judges back at that period of time among the Israelites was more or less a military figure who assumed the role of governing over the people in the land. And he was doing quite well, and he was slewing a few Philistines. And so to the Philistines, this guy, this person of Samson, became their absolute worst nightmare. We also learn from the scriptures that Samson had quite an eye for the ladies. And early on in his life, he takes on a Philistine woman for a wife, and his parents are not too happy about it. And she ends up betraying him, which is kind of a foreshadowing of what Delilah would eventually do to him. So after he's betrayed by her, he gets rid of her, passes her off to somebody who was like the best man at his wedding. And he goes on. And he also had an eye for the ladies of the night. Okay? And then one day, along comes Delilah. And in many ways, this poor guy had no chance. He was smitten with her from the get-go. I know feeling, Susan. I absolutely could relate to this story very much. Delilah also was a Philistine. And so the Philistines approached her and said, "Hey, listen, Delilah, this guy's killing us, literally. We got to do something about it. You have to find out the secret of his power, the secret of his superhuman strength. And if you do, we're going to pay you handsomely for it." And so Delilah goes along with the plot and begins to use her feminine wiles and everything else that she could conjure up to try to coax the secret out of Samson. And on three separate occasions, he tells her his secret, but he doesn't tell her the truth. And so, for example, when he says, "Well, I have to be bound with a certain thread that has never been dried." And when he goes to sleep, she ties him up. And then she calls the Philistines in, and he just wakes up, snaps the threads, and he lays all of them to waste. And this happens on three separate occasions. And so finally, now Delilah's at her wit's end, and she pulls out all of the stops. And she plays the "you don't love me" card. "How could you possibly love me if you keep making a fool of me time and time and time again?" And she's relentless and nags. Okay? And Samson caves and tells her that he is a Nazarite, dedicated and consecrated for God, and his strength comes from the fact that a razor has never touched his hair. And so he goes to sleep with his head on her lap, and she calls in a Philistine who comes and shaves his head. And this time when he awakes, he is subdued by the Philistines, who gouge his eyes out, and they make him a slave, and they send him off to work at a grinding mill. Keep in mind here that had he told her the truth in those earlier three instances, he would have been subdued and captured much sooner. So Samson was well aware of the situation that he was in. There's always a struggle between the upper and the lower mind. This is true within us individually. This is true of us as a people. It's true of us as a nation, and it's true of us as a world community. This story of Samson and Delilah is really a profound dramatization of that struggle that goes on all of the time. So the Israelites metaphysically represent that part of us that is always striving, trying to grow, trying to arrive at a deeper, more profound realization of our spiritual being. The Israelites represent that part of us that is trying to make that Christ presence, our light, more manifest throughout the world. The Philistines, on the other hand, are the bad guys. And metaphysically, they represent, again, that part of us which doesn't want to go there to a higher sense of spirituality. You know, like to keep things mundane and like to keep things base, and we'll do absolutely everything or anything to prevent that spiritual growth within us and try to put a stop to our spiritual well-being and really our well-being in general. So you might say, well, what do these things look like? And the Philistines might show up as things that we all know. Our fears, our worries, our preoccupations, our addictions, our habits. Again, absolutely anything that will thwart this plan for us to grow and show and display our light in the world. So Samson, whose name means the sun or the light, is brought into the world for the purpose of overcoming the Philistines and overcoming the darkness. And again, he's given all of the tools that he needs, but nobody ever said it was going to be easy. In fact, at the time that he's coming along, according to the story politically, the Israelites are a conquered people, conquered by the Philistines. So if we bring this back to our individual basis, it would be at a time in our life where we're really up against it. We're really living in a type of darkness and troubles, and maybe we don't see a light, a way out, because we feel suppressed. And so it's not easy for us either, and that was a task that was at hand for Samson. And I'm really stressing this because, you know, week after week, we get up here, and we try to send a message to you, and we try to maybe say something that will inspire you, that will make a difference in your life, so that maybe there's some small takeaway. And then, if we're going to be honest about this, for the most part, and I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks after, and I'm talking about myself here honestly and openly, after I hear an inspiring message, you know, I review things, and there's not a whole heck of a lot that has changed. Even though we too are given all of the tools that we need to fulfill and honor whatever our individual particular purposes might be in our lives, in our relationships, as citizens of a city, as a country, and so forth and so on. It is really tough. But we do have the power. And so the moral of this story of Samson and Delilah is, for God's sakes, don't get a haircut. Really, what the moral of the story is, don't give away your power. This is precisely exactly what Samson did. He knew what was going on. I mean, duh, on three separate occasions, this woman tried to trick you. You woke up to find yourself bound in some way. What in the world were you expecting? What in the world did you think was going to happen, Samson? I mean, really? Well, let's pause and reflect on that for a moment. How often, my friends, do we do something stupid knowing that it was stupid? How often do we make decisions knowing that we were making a decision that wasn't in our best interest, knowing that it was something that was going to be a response to that call of darkness instead of a progression on our path toward the light? How many times do we say yes to our addictions and maybe say, you know what? I know what I'm doing. One little drink isn't going to hurt me. When I was in school, one of the studies that we took up was a case of a young girl who comes and tells her mother, "Mom, Uncle so-and-so touched me." And the mother makes a decision, don't say anything to anybody about this. The mother makes a decision that preserving the peace in the broad family was more important and more significant than the health and well-being of her daughter at that time. Was it an evil decision on her part? No. But she knew exactly what she was doing. And even on the simplest basis, on the simplest form, how many times have you said something to somebody and you just wish you could reach out and grab the words that just came out of your mouth because you knew that they were hurtful? How many times have we refused to forgive somebody and carried a grudge around with us literally for years in a way that imprisoned us? It didn't hurt the person that we were holding a grudge against one iota. A couple weeks ago, I was talking to a neighbor. I saw the movie Book Club, okay? And I told this lady, my neighbor, that it was a really good movie and I highly recommend you going to see it. And she says, my husband Mike, his name also happened to be Mike, he won't go see it because he's got this thing about Jane Fonda, it goes back all the way to when she was protesting the Vietnam War. And I said, really? You got to be kidding me. We're like, that's 50 years ago. And besides which, your husband is younger than I am. He wasn't even eligible to fight in that war age-wise. And does he really think that boycotting Jane Fonda and her movies is in any way being detrimental to her? He's just messing with himself. Delilah didn't steal away Samson's power. He gave it away. And he did so knowingly and willingly. And you might try to argue with what I'm saying and say, we make bad decisions, but we don't do so knowingly and willingly. But there is a difference between making mistakes, which are learning experiences that help us move forward and grow, and making the same decision over and over and over again, and every time we make such a decision, experiencing some level of pain or difficulty or darkness in our lives. We have that tendency to cling to our routine, and we listen to the wrong voices. We give in to the seductions in our life because we're inundated with them. We stay in bad relationships, even though they are hurtful. And we tend to hang on to our hurts because it's what we know. We're used to being ruled by the Philistines, and so the thought of maybe doing something about it always strikes some note of discord within us and paralyzes us. We lie to ourselves. We sign on that this is as good as it ever is going to get, and there's just never enough in the world, and I'll just have to swallow my little spot and do my best to survive. In the worst case, we actually sabotage ourselves, experience a growth spurt, and all of a sudden, like, hey, I've never been here before. This is a little bit uncomfortable. And so we actually are capable of doing things to undermine ourselves. When I was at school, not ministerial school, but studying to be an LUT, Norma Rosado, who is one of my favorite ministers and absolute favorite persons in the world, brought a friend in at the last day of a prayer class, and he shared his story with us. And when he was in high school senior, he was a really high-quality diver and entered into a state competition. And along with his coach, they came up with a strategy, let's do all of the difficult dives first and get them out of the way. And so they did that, and he scored near-perfect scores on absolutely every dive, and he had one dive remaining. And that was just a simple head-first dive into the water. All he had to do was execute that in a tone of mediocrity, and he would have won first prize, state championship. And he shared that he walked towards the edge of the diving board, and somehow his feet got tangled up with each other, and he fell off of the side of the diving board, and he got nothing. A few years later in his young life, he was diagnosed with MS. And then on his deathbed, where he was expected to live another week, maybe two, he shared that he had a vision or a dream. And maybe it was part of his delirium. But somebody or something came to him, he thought that might have been Jesus, and delivered a very simple message. You have no idea how much that you are loved. And he got better. And the doctors absolutely couldn't believe that he got better. And they asked, what did you take? What medicine did you take? We need to know. And he shared his story, and he said, and then I just continued to pray, and that's just it. And he was on Medicaid, and they refused to take him off of the rolls for receiving help because they couldn't believe that he actually had this happen to him in his life. From there, he actually went on to enjoy a lot of prosperity. He did a guest speaking shot one day and said, really a little low on money. It'd be nice if maybe they'll give me $40 or something like that. And when he was done, they handed him an envelope with it had $1,000 in it. And he began to give stuff away. He started purging. He had a lot of computer equipment. Every time he gave a computer away, somebody would give him or he would win a new computer someplace. And so he really spent his life trying to dedicate helping out other people and sending that message that, hey, you know what? You really are incredibly loved. You know, we talk about winning, and the question is there an element of luck in it? And I always say it's better to be lucky than it is to be good. But I really think that being lucky is spelled W-O-R-K. And we do this to ourselves all of the time. We sell ourselves short. We don't allow the Samson within us to rise up. Back when I was in the business world, I made hundreds of sales calls. And one day I reflected that, because it's natural. Some day I walked in really confident into somebody's office. Other days, And in those days when it was, I never once sold a single foot of leather. In effect, I had given away my power. I had absolutely zero chance of making what I wanted to happen, happen. Perhaps Samson's greatest error was laziness. Or maybe that part of ego that can be so arrogant. Even knowing the circumstances, the thought that he would ever lose his strength, his power, maybe seems so incredibly far-fetched that it just led him to do something really stupid. And we tend to forget that there's a carnal part of us that is always in survival mode. And that carnal part of us is threatened by awakened spiritual consciousness. Because as we grow more spiritually and become more aware, yeah, some of that very basic carnal aspect of us has to fall off and no longer be a part of us anymore. There's always that still small voice calling us to move into our Christ awareness and to show our light. But it's in competition with screaming and yelling Philistines that come to us through our TV screens, through the television and radio ads, through advice of well-meaning people, even advice of loved ones. And so sometimes it's just really hard for us to listen to that purpose for which we were brought into this world, that purpose that we are consecrated for to God. There's a Delilah in each and every one of us. You know, Delilah represents those negative emotions that go right for the jugular and try to tempt our minds and convince us, hey, this growth thing is really not a good idea. And then it's up to us to make a decision. Sunday mornings, I have a little bit of a mini ritual. I get up and I catch 20 minutes of the news, and I was watching CBS News today, and they did a special feature on a homeless person that made his transition in Chicago. And I was so fascinated because they devoted minutes of time to this person who was nicknamed Blue because he would tend to sleep on the blue line to get out of the elements. And if you would pass by, he would always work the same corner downtown, and he always had a sign saying, I'm homeless. If you could help out, it would be great. And over the course of time, he ended up developing relationships with people. And he would get engaged with people, and they would make a connection. And so they interviewed a half a dozen people who were just beside themselves with mourning this morning because they were just going to miss this guy. On one occasion, a woman came out of the Ogilvie station, and it was pouring rain. And amongst his belongings, he had a bent-up umbrella, and he ran over to her, and he opened his umbrella and put it over her head and guided her to where she needed to be. I don't know what your individual strengths are. All I know is that you do have them. And I also know it is really so important for you to fulfill your reason for being here by asking yourself what it is I'm good at. And instead of coming up with 25 reasons why you're not good or you're incapable of doing something, just come up with one. That you are good and that you absolutely are capable of doing something. We all share that universal light, that Christ essence, but each and every one of us is an incredibly unique expression of that. I can't quite display it the way you can, and you can. If you don't take the time and you don't make the effort, all that you're doing is giving away your power. At the end of the story of Samson, he's working the grinding mill. And again, the metaphysics of it are incredible because his destiny at that point is just to push and be bored and tired and live every day doing the same thing over and over without seeing any light and any progress. And the fact that his eyes were gouged out just drove home the metaphysics that when we give away our power, that's when we lose our sight and our vision in the truest, most meaningful spiritual sense. And I could relate to that grindstone thing. You know, I spent a good portion of my life when I just didn't want to put my feet on the floor in the morning to do the same thing over and over again, and you get caught up in that rut. Nobody imposes those ruts on us. If we're in that situation, it's because we've given away our power, and for one reason or another, we have chosen and decided, this is not where I'm stuck. This is what's good enough for me. You have a strength. Maybe not a strength that is strong enough to push apart two pillars and bring down thousands of Philistines, which is what Samson ended up doing. But you have a strength that certainly matches that of the homeless person. You have a strength that allows you to share your being, your light, with absolutely everybody that you come in contact with. You have the strength to make an incredible difference in your own life and in this crazy world that we live. And so I just invite you now to hone in on that and reflect on what your gift, your power, your light is, and how you can get it back if you've given it away.